There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Thursday style. Glad to have you here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And let's just give you a little heads up if you're going to kind of plan out what you do for listening. Hour number two of the show, because we're going to talk about hour number one and do it right now. But hour number two, he used to be referred to as State Senator Cam Ward, but now Director of the Bureau of Pardon and Paroles. Cam Ward's going to join us with this DOJ lawsuit against Alabama Department of Corrections. Lots to talk about with a man that I've been talking about this. He was appointed during Bentley's first term, and we started talking about Alabama's prison issue back then. And now, well, now it happened. Now the sky did fall on this that we've been wondering all this time. What does it mean, and what can be done to avoid any further ramifications on this? We'll talk to Cam Ward about that in the second hour. Also coming up this hour, Robert Kennedy Jr. joins us. But leadoff batter and my buddy and one of my favorite Marines, Cal Walters, host of the Scuttlebutt Radio Network. You can hear here on FM Talk 106.5 Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock. And a guy that gets the joy of hanging out with me on the battleship when we do those shows. Cal, how are you, man?
It is great. It's great to have 5% of the Scuttlebutt Radio Network here with you today.
No, see, Tom's not listening. 95% of the Scuttlebutt Radio Network is right here with Cal. You know, folks, you've got to check. You got to check out the show and listen to issues that are affecting veterans as described and discussed, and hopefully solutions come up with by veterans. And it's why I pay more attention when you say something, Tom says something, my buddy Brian Knight says something, because as veterans, I think y'all's opinion when it comes to what we do overseas in engagement and obviously what happens with our fighting men and women, y'all's opinion's more important. And when I saw you tweet yesterday this story about the American taxpayers footing the bill for continued fraud, misspending, and flagrant waste in Afghanistan, I said, let's get Cal's take on this. So, Cal, let us know. I mean, you saw this story. You reacted to it. What's your reaction?
Well, to be honest with you, Sean, I'm not terribly shocked about it. This is something that we have covered on the Scuttlebutt for years. This is, I think what's happening is now that you have the plans from President Trump to accelerate the troop drawdown to about 2,500 troops in Afghanistan, and you're not seeing a lot of results. I mean, Afghanistan is still struggling with daily attacks. So we heard about a reporter that was killed, a female reporter that was killed just recently. Their economy is in shambles. And this is after the American taxpayers have spent roughly $1 trillion in Afghanistan. That's about $3,000 per American.
Wow.
And roughly $138 billion of that has been spent on Afghan relief and reconstruction. So that's, you know, to try to prop up and do that nation building that we've heard about. But the staggering part of that is almost $20 billion of that has just been written off as waste. It has been corruption, fraud. It's basically, well, you know, there's a story we covered. And I mentioned it to you, Sean, going back as far as 2013 that we brought up on the Scuttlebutt. And, of course, it's tied in with these burn pits. That's something we've talked about that has probably caused a tremendous amount of respiratory problems and other illnesses with the troops that served over there. But the government spent about $80 million on incinerators. You know, just think of it, just a big burn box. Okay. So that you would be able to burn all of this waste and do it without harming our troops. Well, at least 9 military bases. Those incinerators, they came from the contractors. They weren't built properly. You couldn't get a forklift into the opening to be able to dump the waste into the incinerator. In some places, it was going to cost $1 billion a year just to operate them. So what do? They don't use them. And that goes back 5 years. So it's no different now. It's just, you know, they figure out how to do it in bigger and better ways. Part of the story is you had a subcontractor for the DOD, Paul Daigle, up in Huntsville. And, you know, he figured out that he could bring on labor that was actually unqualified to be serving as contractors under the DOD. And so what he did when the government said, wait, you know, you can't use these contractors, he went on to the internet and just got them all diplomas from these diploma mills and put them back on the payroll. And all the while, he's making money off of this. And then there's just outright false billing. And there's no telling how many millions of dollars, you know, that this guy has taken the American taxpayer for. You know, so it's systemic. It's really no different than what they did after Katrina and really what they've done with this pandemic. You know, it's we're going to throw money at the problem, and we don't necessarily care how much goes out the back door because we look like we're doing something good.
Yeah, and if you're just joining us, talking to Cal Walters from the Scuttlebutt Radio Network and a veteran and a Marine, as you look at this, is this... Well, okay. Number one, the frustration for me, and I imagine even more amplified for you, is when we don't have the money to give our veterans and give our fighting men and women what they should be receiving. Yet you're talking about incinerators that are just sitting there rusting because we couldn't get it. I mean, this is that $640 toilet seat with the Pentagon stuff, right? I mean, this is just waste.
Well, I think it's the toilet seat on steroids,
yeah.
You know, because at least you could take a dump in the toilet seat. You know, with the incinerators, you can't dump anything in there. And I'm sorry, I don't know if you can say that during
you the did. You're, and you're a Marine. But, you can say that. You know, that's expected.
But here's another great example of it. You know, $10 billion of what they put in for this recovery was in sort of this Afghan war on drugs. And here we are 10 years later, well, you know, for this report at least, 80% of the world's heroin and opium still come from Afghanistan, and they produce meth. So I guess what they really need to do in Afghanistan is make you go and get a prescription to get Sudafed from a doctor. That'll stop it. If they do that over there, that will stop all of the meth production over there. You don't need to throw in billions of dollars. Just make the doctors write prescriptions.
Yeah, Cal, looking at this, there's a couple things that stand out. Number one, out of this amount of money that has been this gone to Afghanistan, and this is an unnamed friend of mine and a veteran, a person who did two tours in Afghanistan, and said this idea of skid greasing, we'll put it that way, is pretty common. That there was a certain portion of the money that you knew was going to, you know, this power broker, this politician, this person who could organize this group or the other. I mean, it was just a cost of doing business, I guess. How do we line item that coming out of a budget?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, and I think you absolutely can budget it because I think it's something that everyone was well aware of. It's just when you get into a situation where not only do the warlords and the tin pot dictators in Afghanistan realize that they can ask for it, but every cop on the beat and everyone who's in their military can ask for a few dollars to be able to do something. Yeah, you know, it's a problem that we face in a country where there really is no loyalty. You know, we spent, I think, $500 million to train Syrian rebels. You know, it was a force of about 50 to 75, maybe 100. And in their very first battle with ISIS, they surrendered.
Unbelievable.
You know, that we gave them the money and they just turned around and handed over all of their weapons, all their supplies over to ISIS.
Which is our stuff, you know, our technology.
You know, you want the uniforms? Which now came back to fight us. So it was just a system where we didn't really want to address some of the problems. We threw as much money as we could because it sounded good. And in the end, we're going to leave Afghanistan. It's still going to be the Wild Wild West.
I want to get into that, too, with you in just a second. But I want to point out something specific from a story you tweeted yesterday from Fox, but I've read it on a couple other military sites as well, that the you talked about the cops on the beat there. This ghost soldier thing. So let's put it, here's concrete. This isn't just, you know, Cal and Sean musing over what might be happening. They said that there were people on the rolls there in Afghanistan that were soldiers that they were asking for pay for. 42,000 of them didn't really exist.
Well, yes. You know, and this ghost soldiers, they were personnel that were listed on the books. And so they were receiving money to pay for these soldiers. Well, once there was an investigation, just a simple audit, suddenly, as you said, 42,000 Afghan troops and police officers just disappeared. And a report that was published in late August 2020 found that 50 to 70% of police positions were ghost soldiers. This was money that was coming in. Somebody somewhere in that government system was pocketing it. And if it goes even further, you know, we were supposed to be setting up this these school systems for the Afghans. And if you read some of the reports and look at some of the stories, you know, the curriculum, we were going to buy textbooks for basic education. They were going to be supported with USAID. And they went in and they found deficiencies in the books. They had blank pages, misspellings. They had books that weren't usable anymore. And they had schools themselves that had structural deficiencies that would probably make our school system look good.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about the subject here. We have, you know, there's stories right now of men who fought in Afghanistan who now have their sons fighting in Afghanistan. This is a war that is multi-generational. When is it over? And if that's being said on the drawdown, we're at 2,500. Do we leave a reaction force there? Do we ever get completely out of Afghanistan? When do we stop feeding them this cash flow? When is it over, Cal?
I don't know in terms of cash flow that we can ever pull out. It's in many ways, it's a problem that we've accepted, not necessarily created, because when we went in and had to get the Taliban out of there, it created a power vacuum. And so the U.S. tried to go in and insert itself to fill that vacuum. Unfortunately, on the back end, we have largely failed at the nation building side of it. It's still a fractured nation. You still have the warlords largely in control, although now they've kind of made their way and become the politicians over there. And unfortunately, if we just said, look, we're done, we're going to move out, someone else would fill that vacuum, and we don't want that to happen. So it'll be interesting to see as we transition, if we transition to a new administration, exactly how that will play out, because all indications are that a Biden administration will move more into the State Department handling many of our foreign efforts versus the DOD. When ISIS basically ravaged that entire part of the world. So it'll be interesting to see, because if we decide we're going to pull back out, does that leave that vacuum where ISIS can come back in? And then we're right back where we were with basically, you know, fighting terrorists in the Middle East again.
Yes, but you're talking about, so if it's, because it's got to be something like ISIS or a group more than a nation, right? You're talking about who would come in and fill the void. I think, you know, the Russians, even back when they were Soviet Union, they learned their lesson there. I don't know that they're anxious to get in there. I don't know if the Pakistanis want to take over, maybe. But other than that, it would have to be something like an ISIS, right, or a terrorist group versus an existing nation state.
Oh, you know, I think it would be more of an ideology. Okay. That would come in. I don't think you would see, you know, the Russians, they learned their lesson there. And I don't think there's any nation that necessarily wants to take it over, but certainly you have groups that would like to use their influence to be able to control certain areas and certain parts of that country to be able to bend it to their will. I mean, that's basically what the Taliban had done prior to 2001 in the 9/11 attacks. They didn't control the country, but they were able to use it as an operating base.
So you believe at some level the cash flow goes in there. Do we have a rapid reaction force in there for the rest of our lives or longer?
Well, I think at 2,500 troops, I think that is something of a rapid reaction force. Obviously, we could continue if we wanted to try to train the military, although we've seen that, over the past decade, that really hasn't worked for us all that well, because the people don't necessarily have an allegiance to the country versus an allegiance to whoever's in control of their neighborhood or their region. And so it's still very factionalized when it comes to that. So I think there are still some challenges there, but I don't think we necessarily want to pull out entirely, because again, that leaves that void, and no one wants to be the president who they can point to and say, well, it's because you pulled out and that's why ISIS is now coming back and is able to flourish and grow in that area.
There's a lot to think about there. All right, Cal, if people have been, for years and years under a rock out there and not tuned into the Scuttlebutt Radio Network, tell them, what's your elevator when somebody says, hey, what's Scuttlebutt Radio Network about? What's your elevator talk to them?
Well, Tom and I, we're two Marine veterans. We have a little bit to say, the First Amendment right to say it in the fighting spirit to be able to keep that right. And we are all about what is good for the veterans. We try not to play politics on one side or the other, and we are all about bringing veterans together to create a mutually supportive network so that we can advance the issues important to veterans regardless of when they serve and where they served. And on the way out, Sean, I want to thank you for having me on. It's always great to talk to you. I'm pretty sure that if there is anything to be found here, there's fraud and waste. I'm pretty sure Nancy Pelosi is probably going to dig as hard as she will. She's probably going to go digging, like she would go digging for Chinese influence in Congress, because she's going to go and eat in Chinatown.
So
she'll get to the bottom of it, I promise.
While we could talk about those who won't, we got to find and lift up those who will, because it is unacceptable, absolutely unacceptable, when we don't have the resources to give our warriors and our veterans here who come home, when we don't have the resources for them, but we line the pockets of somebody half a world away who doesn't love our country. It is an absolute, it's an embarrassment, but it's an insult. Insult to y'all, it's an insult to every taxpayer out there. And I'm going to keep hawking on it, keep crying about it, because it needs to be discussed. It gets pushed to the back of the news cycle. It gets pushed to the back page. This is real. This is 20 years in Afghanistan.
It does get pushed to the back of the news cycle, and it's only because veterans stand up and say no more. And unfortunately, too many times, too often, Sean, it's brought to the forefront of the news cycle only because a veteran has decided to kill themselves in the parking lot of a VA facility.
Yep.
And that suddenly then it comes back to the forefront. Everybody is all a Twitter about it. And then it gets cycled right back into the rear.
Yep, and we're not going to let that happen. I know y'all don't, and we're not on the Midday Show or any of our shows here on FM Talk 106.5. And quick reminder, too, if people want to get more information outside the show, they can just get, Facebook or go to the Twitter? What's the best way to get in touch with y'all?
Well, we've got scuttlebuttnetwork.com. We got information there. We do have a Facebook page, Scuttlebutt Network. You can follow me on Twitter. It's @Cal_SBN. And, of course, we're on Wednesday nights from 8 to 9. And then our regular shows are up via podcast on most of the major podcasting sites. And, of course, you can always enjoy Tom's tirade if you like to get your blood pressure going. That's up on castbox.net. So, it's a little unique. Like I said, we try not to play too much in terms of politics. We just try to do what's best for the veterans and try to bring together, veterans. Alabama has never shied away from sending its sons and daughters into harm's way. And I think South Alabama is remarkable in the fact that it does a fantastic job in supporting those sons and daughters when they come back from serving. And we really are fortunate to live in such a unique area and a unique environment where the community supports veterans in such a tremendous way. And it's only, it's really only possible with folks like yourself and the South Alabama Veterans Council and all of the resources that are out there to be able to come together to make sure that no veterans fall through the cracks.
Well, everything we can do is still not enough for what y'all have given for our country. Cal, as always, man, I appreciate our conversations, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Hey, that sounds great, Sean. Appreciate it, and have a great show.
You do. All right. There he is. Cal from Scuttlebutt Network. Of course, you can grab that podcast along with the other 53 hours of live local programming that we do right there on our website, fmtalk1065.com. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 1065, Midday Mobile. Yeah, you can get links to more information because somebody's asking about Scuttlebutt Radio Network. More info through our website, fmtalk1065.com. And also, a portion goes straight to the Scuttlebutt Radio Network and their website. And check out the show, 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights. Show for veterans by veterans. And I'm keeping my streak going because I'm joined by my friend and veteran and regular guest on the show, Robert Kennedy Jr. Hey.
Hey, Sean. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. And I know we got, political stuff to get into, but beforehand, can we talk? This is pretty big rivalry week in your world, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. It is Army-Navy week.
Yeah.
So this Saturday, the United States Naval Academy will once again be beating Army and putting them in their proverbial place.
Now, what do you know, like, in the last 10 years? I mean, is it, I watch it from time to time, but obviously not being a graduate like you are, I don't pay it. Is Navy way up on this, or where are y'all tied at this? Where are y'all?
No, we're up marginally. So it's one of those things where it always kind of comes back to 50-50. But we had a streak there for about 12, 13 years where we just cleaned their clocks. So we were able to get a little extra distance.
Well, I want to talk about this. We'll take the time machine here because a story from the Baltimore Sun, and this is headline. You're going to have to decode this for me. The great Buell caper detailed finally mids nab four Army mascots on the eve of big game. Now, not that you would have any association with this or have anything to knowledge of this, but tell me, what is this all about?
Well, you know that college rivals tend to pull pranks on one another.
Mm-hmm.
And the Naval Academy and the United States Military Academy are no exception to that. So our claim to fame is that we pulled the greatest college caper in the history of all college capers.
Wow.
So my senior year at the Naval Academy, 17 of my classmates went to the United States Military Academy at West Point and commandeered their mascots, which are mules. So they literally went in there wearing Army uniforms. And under the leadership of two Navy SEALs that were a cadre at the Naval Academy, they actually got them out of the barn, got them into a truck, and then transported them over 4 hours back to the Naval Academy campus. Now, as you can well imagine, once they found out that the mules were missing, they had helicopters, police officers, etc., pursuing down the New Jersey Turnpike and 95, trying to catch them before they actually made it back to campus. And it was fortunate that one of the gentlemen who was the lead of that had a father who was a Navy captain who ended up working for the Vice Chief of Naval Operations, so the second person in the entire Navy. And he was able to clear some of the roadblocks for us. So we actually got the four mules onto our campus. And that's the picture that you're looking at.
So they figured out, so the alarm goes off or whatever, that the mules have now been taken. And now they're trying to get y'all before you get back onto campus at the Naval Academy.
I mean, literally, it's like all of the stereotypes that you see with the helicopters flying overhead with the big spotlights, military police. They literally they'd called the FBI, obviously. Truth be told, the group that did that, the 17 of my classmates, managed to get those mules onto campus. And, we had the bonfire and the pep rallies and all that stuff, and people were riding the mules. In full disclosure, no mules were hurt in the execution of this operation.
That's good. And my laughing will probably get me in trouble because, you know, it's way heavy on Army on my side of things. But was there any kind of punishment? I mean, did you get called, you know, everybody get called down or what happened?
No. Actually, they ended up getting commendations from the senior staff for executing initiative under the umbrella of Good Spirit. So
can we still do that? I mean, are we in our country anymore? Would that happen and have that same outcome today? I mean, I hope that's no. I mean, that's the spirit I like, but I don't think it happens like that anymore.
No, one of the things that we were joking about was, so that was when I was a student, and then I was back on staff just before 9/11. And we know that now in the post 9/11 world, you're not going to risk that because the security implications are too high. So they still have pranks they pull off, but nothing quite that brazen.
Well, I mean, then it will stand in the annals of greatest college pranks forever then.
Yes, class of 1992, United States Naval Academy. Fortune favors the bold.
There you go. All right, so let's get into a discussion. We didn't get to this last week. We were talking about it, and it continues now. I mean, we have the question out of Texas with, I think, 17 other states backing it, challenging what happened in four other states on Election Day and the days afterwards. So your thought process on that, and for everybody to know, so if you're just joining us, so Robert is a Democrat, and he was, you know, a supporter, not a primary supporter, but a supporter of Joe Biden, right? Mm-hmm. I can, as yep. it wasn't your primary candidate, but soon on. So you're a supporter of Biden. I'm a guy that is looking at this going, there are a lot of questions out there around the country, but these four states in particular, at least the allegations are saying that these states broke their own law and broke equal protection from a federal level. Well, I mean, so through your eyes, you don't see this or you don't see that there's a need for investigation?
Well, let's go back to election night. So on election night, I did some digital commentary with WKRG5. And Peter Albrecht actually asked me this question because in advance of the election, there was telegraphing that suggested there would be a number of lawsuits that happened after the election. And he asked me whether or not I was concerned. And I told him that I wasn't. And the reason why I wasn't concerned was because there was not a single consistent argument that was going to give the court something that they could anchor to when evaluating whether or not to, you know, direct the states to do something different. And that's actually manifested itself since the election. I mean, what's the count now? Something in the neighborhood of 30 plus different lawsuits have been filed.
Mm-hmm.
And literally every time another one gets filed and you have the court system, many of whom have individuals who were appointed by President Trump or other Republicans, every single time one of those things gets slapped down, it just takes the entire bucket of complaints and makes them less and less credible. So even if this was the one with the proverbial smoking gun that really was something that could be evaluated, I just think there's such a lack of credibility at this point that there literally is no there.
Here's my worry with the Supreme Court basically, you know, saying it's not saying that they were not going to hear the case, but not hear it now for an injunction. And my worry is if they're going to do anything, they need to do it now. Because my fear is if they come back to this, right, they come back to this down the road, what that could mean. If you have Inauguration Day, you have Joe Biden, the next president of the United States, and then Supreme Court gets around to hearing some nuanced part of this, and now we're looking at this in March or April or something like that. And let's say it goes Trump's way. I mean, to go in and remove somebody from the White House and put somebody else in?
Well, it's not going to go his way. Right. And so that's kind of the point that I was making about the whole thing. So if, for example, you had that smoking gun and it all of a sudden you found out you had, you know, 150,000 votes in Michigan, for example, I'm not sure whether or not Michigan's one of the states that's being challenged or not, but you would have to have that happen in every single jurisdiction with a subsequent order to either invalidate votes or to order a new election. And it's just not going to happen in any jurisdictions, even if it happens in one.
But if you invalidated votes, and that's what they're talking about, you would invalidate the votes in these four states, then you would be you wouldn't have to run the election again. They would just invalidate those. It would change, you know, and it would change the Electoral College, which that's a problem. If they don't do something now, the electors are getting ready to meet.
But because that case sourced out of Texas in particular, Texas is going to have a hard time demonstrating standing and how it actually ended up impacting the folks in Texas, even if the order ends up happening somewhere else. In my belief, which of course is just one person's opinion, is that it's going to be hard pressed to identify which of the individual votes would have been not the intent of the voter and some sort of nefarious action on the part of the people who were evaluating the vote. And it's just all squishy and confusing and stuff like that. And so, like I said, even if it were true, I just don't think there's any way practically to execute it, which is the reason why I've maintained the whole time that President-elect Biden will be inaugurated on Inauguration Day on January 20th.
The idea here is if, okay, and I, pragmatically I'm with you, and I've taken a lot of arrows for this, saying that if I had to call Vegas and bet money or something like that, then I would bet money that Joe Biden will be inaugurated. But at the same time, that squishiness bothers me a lot, and questions. And if we further erode people's faith in the vote, and I do believe that this is nonpartisan, bipartisan. I know it is framed as a partisan discussion, but one day, you know, it might be flipped around. This is a big deal, and have it be like, oh, everything's fine, let's move along, like I hear from some Democrat pundits. I think that is, I think that's going to be a loss for our whole country, all of us.
Well, you actually hit the nail on the head when we were talking about this earlier in the process, and we said that no matter what the standard is, that you and I agreed in the sense that when it comes to a federal election, particularly presidential elections, it should probably all be the same. So either you get all the absentee votes in advance and you count them all by election day, or you get them all by election day and then you count them afterwards within some time frame, you know, whatever it ends up being. And that actually is the thing that I think is best for our country. And I think that is something that we could actually end up getting bipartisan alignment on. But the kicker really comes down to whether I'm sitting in a Democratic chair and I'm happy with the outcome, or whether there are other individuals who are sitting in Republican chairs and they're not happy with the outcome. Invariably, as long as you have different jurisdictions determining what the rules are, you're always going to end up in a situation where somebody prefers the rules in Alabama but doesn't like the rules in California.
Yeah, and I don't know how you get people to agree. I mean, and that's my rub, that let's go beyond, let's go to the state level and not just federal level. And that was one of my issues, that in these states, I'm not even looking at this and saying it's Trump versus Biden. It's just, okay, it's just state law versus what happened. And just saying that, well, because these are extraordinary times, state law doesn't have to be recognized when you get, you know, get ballots in that are late. I hate that. And I do realize the subtlety in it, that the voter did the right thing. But why have a state law if you're going to just let it, you're just going to push right past it?
But someone's always making an interpretation of whether or not that state law is adequate. And whenever there are disagreements with that, you end up going into the court system. So that actually ended up happening in all of the jurisdictions that are party to this case.
Right. Tell you what, let's see, you got a second? Can you hold on? We'll run the break.
Sure.
Okay, right up against break, coming right back, more with Robert Kennedy Jr. Talk more about this. Also, I got a couple other questions about what looks to be the incoming president. And something that Robert and I promised each other, I think we're both on the same page. Stuff that's talked about, that is brought up, that is so very serious right before Election Day, and so many of these stories that disappear into the ether afterwards. We'll do a little checkup on that one, too.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Somebody asked me here on an email about the locals only Christmas list. Y'all, that is up and ready to go. You can check it out by going to our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. Right? Go there. Or the website, fmtalk1065.com. Just click the link for Locals Only Christmas. Big thank you to Greer's Market and Cash Saver for presenting this. Also, great local businesses like Yellowhammer Kayaks, Bayside Shoes for Life, Cammie's Old Dutch Ice Cream, Styx River Shooting Center, Mobile Shooting Center, Canabama, the Old Mobile Trivia Book, and Mobile Bay Coins. And it's listed up there. And you've got just different gift ideas. They are, and kind of the filter I use for this, when I say locals, sometimes I don't think this year we have anything in Northwest Florida, but sometimes we've had Northwest Florida or Southeast Mississippi or on up. I think we have people as far as like maybe Greenville, Alabama, but it's local. It's not just local retailers, but the things being sold are locally crafted or written or put together, and they're really cool. Really cool Christmas gifts at that, too. So they're things maybe you wouldn't see. And some of these people don't have, I mean, some have websites and social media and all that. Some just have a phone number because this is just something they do, you know, as a hobby or a second job. You know, what is it? This is their gig, their side hustle. But they make cool stuff or write cool stuff or create cool stuff. And so check it out. Those lists are out there, and they're great Christmas presents for you to give this year. So check them out. All right. Continue our conversation with my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. And we wanted to talk a bit about this this Hunter Biden thing. And so okay. CNN says, after going quiet in the months before the election, federal authorities are now actively investigating the business dealings of Hunter Biden, a person with knowledge of the probe said. His father, President-elect Joe Biden, is not implicated. Now that the election is over, the investigation is entering a new phase. Federal prosecutors in Delaware, working with the IRS Criminal Investigation Agency and the FBI, are taking overt steps such as issuing subpoenas and seeking interviews, the person with knowledge said. It goes on to break this out, but it seems to have built to a fevered pitch here. Now, this isn't even, and you know this is true. I'll get to my partisan side of this in a second, but okay. But just the regular guy stuff. I want, when allegations are made before elections, these big allegations are made, I want to see them. I want to see them continue after an election. You know what I'm saying? When okay. you have these shocking mm-hmm. allegations, and then they just kind of disappear into the ether, it drives me berserk.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's unfortunately the political world that we're in, because as you and I have talked about a lot, we are both accountability advocates. So if you have anybody who is breaking the law, then they should be investigated. And if the investigation determines that charges should be filed, and then the chips fall where they may. And that shouldn't be based upon what's happening on a calendar.
Okay. Yeah, and in complete agreement there. Now, let's talk about the politics of this, because you've got investigators examining, you know, whether Hunter Biden violated tax and money laundering laws and business dealings in foreign countries, principally China, also okay. Ukraine. I would like to point out those are two countries that former President Obama put Vice President Biden in charge of, and that's where Hunter was doing his dealings.
Connected?
Well, okay, and we have to that has to be proved, but from the outside looking in. Hey, your dad is the vice president of the United States, and you get great gigs and deals, let alone the Bob Alinsky testimony, what he had to say about his dealings with the Biden family.
The one where he was being paid like $26,000 a month or something insane like that?
Right. So, it's actually one of them was even more like sit on a board that he had, you know, no knowledge of that business. I mean, come on. This is like this kind of stuff has happened here in Mobile, New Orleans, and it's, you know, happens in China and Ukraine. But I know it when I see it that it's worth investigating. When dad's got a position to make a difference and son gets a gig on a board, how does this not implicate the vice president, now the president nominee?
Well, let's split hairs just a little bit here. So generally speaking, we talk about the appearance of impropriety. It's probably not particularly good judgment to even start going down that road, right? So I don't think anyone would be recommending that someone does that. But be that as it may, I still have constantly challenged this nexus folks are trying to establish between him doing something that is potentially criminal, and somehow because of that, that means the vice president now or the president-elect has to be implicated.
Yeah, but if he was doing it in Topeka, Kansas, or, you know, Canada, that's one thing. But, I mean, the two places are the places that then-Vice President Biden was in charge of foreign policy.
Yeah, but you can't go in both directions on this. You can't have it both ways.
Which way am I having? I'm having it one way. The one way is Vice President Biden was in charge of foreign policy in Ukraine and China, and Hunter Biden was doing deals, man, and getting gigs in those two places.
So in the history of forever, children have used their parents to get opportunities where their parents have relationships, but that doesn't make the parent wrong. And that's the reason why I keep challenging you on this point.
And the problem is we've now run out of time, but it's different
than... out the clock on you, Sean.
Okay. Well, you know what? We'll pick it up in overtime next week, okay?
It sounds good.
All right. Good deal. We'll talk soon. Robert Kennedy Jr., I guess, and there's some music. And I just, this one, and what does this mean? Does this, are we going to return to what was done during the first couple years? Actually, you could argue all 4 years of President Trump's term, that there's constant investigation, because that's what it looks like might be happening for President-elect Biden. All right. Be right back. We'll be joined by Director of the Bureau of Pardons and Paroles, Cam Ward. DOJ lawsuit against the state of Alabama for prisons. We'll get the details next.